In a world of podcasts, one rises in the night to destroy them all. The elder god in an ocean of noise, the Cthulhu of the airwaves. This is Spoiler Country.
Hey guys, welcome back to Spoiler Country. My name is Kenrick, and of course, another round of Kickstarter. We got to get these guys up there, and we've had some amazing guests on, and today we're lucky to have Travis Webb and Greg Smith, and they just yesterday launched Starlight number 6, a Raver versus Transdimensional Spider Wizards. That's a mouthful of a title, dude. That is awesome. Who came up with that title?
You know, it's funny. Can I just make a mention of that? I just thought of that today. Just because you said that, this whole time we've been avoiding saying the ultimate pitch line, which is Starlight, a story of a raver on drugs fighting transdimensional spider wizards. That really should have been it, but we wanted to avoid saying it until the story got out over. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. So if somebody's coming on to this for the first time, what is Starlight about and why do they need to get into this?
We just said a raver on drugs.
Yeah, you just heard it. That's the thing. Transdimensional spider wizards.
That's the only reason.
Yeah, and a raver fighting them. I mean, what more do you need?
No. So real quick, Greg, do you mind if I take this?
Yeah, go.
I'm sorry. I don't want to stomp on Greg. I do that to him, but he stomps on me too. So what? It's okay. Anyways.
Love you, Travis.
I'm making sure I can talk. Good. All right. So your face, man. I'm glad this is a lot of video because your face is heavy. All right. So. Yeah, it's a story of two childhood superheroes. Like, they were kid superheroes, kind of like Power Pack.
Yeah.
Except that when they got older, they basically got told, you don't get to be superheroes anymore. You got to go be normal teenagers now that you're teenagers. So kid superheroes have superpowers, are fighting villains and bad guys, experiencing the superhero world. And also they're like, yeah, and no one can ever know you were superheroes. And you have to go be normal kids now and go back to high school. So that's where we start. And that really is a deconstruction of a superhero. So, like, you know, right now everybody's kind of doing the, oh my gosh, I just forgot one of the Alan Moore thing, right? Where everybody's trying to deconstruct the superhero, make it more realistic. So Starlight starts with our characters deconstructed.
Yeah.
Being normal teenagers, dealing with the reality. A journalist is trying to hunt them down, you know, Give the dirty story on, get the dirt down low on them. And they're kidnapped by space pirate cats on behalf of transdimensional spider wizards.
Yeah, like they and do.
Like you would have in a deconstructed superhero comic. And they have to figure out how to save themselves and this jerk of a journalist that they don't really like and be superheroes again. So we want to reconstruct them as superheroes. And that's what Starlight's about.
That sounds interesting. How did this idea form?
Drugs.
Yeah. Nice. No. Well, I mean, like all good comics do.
Just long.
Oh my gosh, you guys realize, Greg, it's actually the anniversary of the inception of Starlight this coming week.
I know. Where I got the text message. Oh my God, you're never going to believe what Brent and I talked about and came up with. It's amazing. I can't wait to see you. I'm like, where are you? In the desert still.
We're at Burning Man. And next week's Burning Man. In fact, we're probably going to have a dive on sales next week because all our fans are probably going to be at the burn.
That's awesome. We got to get them now.
I'm trying.
But that's awesome. So this was the first concept of this and the first talk about it happened at Burning Man.
Technically, this, yes. The idea actually stems from when I was really much younger and just out of college and trying to get into comics. Before I realized that it wasn't a stable income, to be honest, right? I submitted to Marvel several times. And one of the submissions I did was Power Pack as teenagers, still being Power Pack brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And, you know, deconstructing them because that was already starting to become a trend.
Right.
And failed. I got one of my rejection letters, which I do. One thing about Marvel, I don't know if they still do this, but when they would reject things, they would literally like identify exactly what you're doing wrong and what you should do to correct it.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So my letter literally said, you know, learn how to write a comic book.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he took all that time and he came back and he was like, it was a training montage for like 20 years. And he was like, I'm going to learn. And then he calls me up and he's like, teach me how.
Tom. And you just whip in and you just sitting there.
It was like Rocky and you know, we were just like running up the stairs and yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And none of that helped with my writing. But anyways, we had great abs during that time.
Yeah. We both looked really good. We ran across the beach like Apollo and Rocky. We looked great.
It looked great.
Yeah.
So I went on and had a different career path for a long time because I'll be honest, like in comic books, as far as I know, like there are some people who are wildly successful, but they're the exception.
Yeah.
Generally, it's not like most people who are semi-successful in comic books or have any real love of writing comic books either have another job or some type of benevolent benefactor.
Right.
You know, a spouse or family. And that's true of writers in general. You know, like it's hard to be a professional writer and make enough money to live on writing alone. And that's unfortunate, right? Like that was devastating to learn out of college, you know, and you see your friends who go out and have a movie made on their property or have several movies based on the part, big giant movies, and they're borrowing money for cigarettes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, $500 million the movie made, and they're not getting payouts from the studio because the studio is doing math and accounting in a way that says they don't have to pay.
Yeah.
We don't got to pay.
So I took a step back. I couldn't afford to do that as a kid. So I had to go back and do other things. So I just became a technical writer. But I also started working in Hollywood. Got a little gig, doing gig work with through William Morris and stuff. And they connected me to Brett around the same time Brett was big with Surrogates. Mm-hmm. And in one of our conversations, when we were working on a project, a package project, which is about the same time I meet Greg, just soon after that, because I was still doing stuff for William Morris when I met Greg. Mm-hmm. I told him about my experience with Marvel and how that had really made me hunker down and really think about how a comic book's built. Mm-hmm. And I told him the story of my idea, and I told him, you know, my idea was to have Katie, the only thing that sticks out, the other three things don't matter as much, but the only thing that carried over was I said that Katie was 5 years old when she got superpowers.
Yeah.
And then she witnessed people getting beat up or even sometimes dying.
Yeah.
At 5 years old from superpowers. It's not a good idea for a 5 year old to have superpowers. It's a cute idea for funsy, right? But if you really wanted to deconstruct Power Pack, it would be traumatic as all hell for the young, all of them, to be honest, but especially for Katie. And then what does she do when she becomes a teenager? So in my pitch to the Marvel, Katie has a bad drug addiction and goes to raves and sneaks out a lot because she's dealing with it.
Yeah.
And so then we never brought it up again for 10 years. We were at Burning Man and, you know, we did some other projects and stuff. And Brett goes, okay, I'm going to tell you, the sun was coming out. The moon was going down. We were on some stage that apparently had stuff going on the night before. And Brett says to me in the weird orange morning sky as some weird psytrance based music's playing off on a mutant vehicle and people are doing naked yoga, right? He says, remember that story you had, the idea for Power Pack you had? Yeah. He goes, I'd like to do that. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. You know, that didn't really work out well for me. And he goes, no, I just think you could do a really good comic about a raver and a superhero. I said, no, I'm not doing that. Not in a million years. Because I have a history from raving.
Yeah.
Right? I owned nightclubs and stuff. And he's like, no, man, I think you would have a really good insight on how that would affect, how being a superhero would affect a person and how that would lead into being a raver and stuff. And I said, look, I'll do it on one condition. Because what's that? I said, and I'm going to point out that we were at Burning Man and the sun was rising. So we'd been up all night for some reason. And my idea to stop him from talking me into doing this project, which I wanted to do a project with Brett more than anything in the world, except if it involved ravers. So my idea in this head state is I'll do it if we can do transdimensional spider wizards and space pirate cats. I just crammed those words together.
Like squirrel nut zipper pancakes.
Yes. Right. And he goes, oh, I'd love to draw that. Let's do it. That didn't work.
Damn it. Now I'm stuck.
So I text Greg as soon as it seemed like a reasonable hour.
Like 15 minutes later.
Sun was up.
Sun's up. Are you up?
Now 6:20 in the morning. Burn it.
It was like a stream of consciousness text messaging. I mean, but that's how, I mean, that's kind of how we talk anyways. It's Travis joked that we step on each other sometimes, but it's, I mean, we just talk that way. That's the kind of dialogue we have anyways. So
you start typing, you open your mouth, a bunch of stuff comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 20% of it, you're like, I can use that.
I would say 40% of it is just, and then.
No, and then.
That's what I texted to him. I think I just texted, and then transdimensional spider wizards probably misspelled six different ways. And he's probably just going, the fuck did they take?
I think I did. I did. I was like, are you still in the desert? Are you? And you're like, no, we're coming back. And like, now?
Hey, or are you actually driving?
Yeah. I was like, we should talk over coffee or something like that when you get back to town.
Oh, God. Well,
oh, yeah.
So moving now forward, this is your sixth edition. Does that mean six successful Kickstarters, or did you do one and two and then three, four, five, or how did it come about?
Six successful, one failed.
One? Which one failed?
The one that didn't have Sarah on the cover.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, do you want to hear a lesson?
Yes.
Hey, I haven't said this to Greg yet, so Greg, I'm going to wander off for just a second.
All right.
All right, so we had a pretty good story. I showed Greg the story when I got back. We met for lunch, and Greg, you can tell them how you felt, but now, or you can tell them after I get done with this, you can tell them what happened.
After.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm going to just run over this real quick. So we did issue one. We broke 10,000 on our first issue, which is amazing. Like, hardly anyone does that, right? Yeah. We did over 10,000 on our first issue. That's so rare. And we come up to issue two and we do a cover, and the cover is of aliens, right?
Yeah.
And of these transdimensional spider wizards. And it looks really good. And we really like it. And that Kickstarter died. It just failed. And Huh?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I don't want to. It was devastating. How do you go from 10,000 to failing your next Kickstarter? Well, first of all, there's a 30% drop. No one told us. And we were new. I didn't even know what Kickstarter was when we did the first one, really. So that 30% drop actually was like a 70% drop. It was devastating. And we learned two really valuable lessons. Well, three lessons. The first lesson was, in my opinion, and Greg might change, have additional lessons, but the first lesson was the second Kickstarter has this huge drop. You need to prepare for it and be aware of it. Adjust accordingly.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Number two, Sarah Sells, always put Sarah on the cover. And that was something Lee Moyer came out. He was like, you have one character here that's selling your comic, and the rest of it's noise to the Kickstarter fandom. Wow. You know, the Kickstarter customer. You know, you put Sarah on anything, she's gonna sell. And that's turned out to be true sense, to be honest. And then the third valuable lesson is don't watch a Kickstarter the same day Boom Studios launches a Keanu Reeves project.
Oh,
that's $1 million.
Was that Berserk?
At exactly the same time that you launch.
And you could see everybody just kind of to that and then
kind of like fall off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because by the time it gets done having its hype, the album has already pushed us down to the bottom.
Yeah.
We can't recover from that.
No.
You know, nobody came to see us from Kickstarter. We got zero Kickstarter. We did good, but it was just our most base fan group.
Did you think when you had that uber successful one, then you're coming back with two? And number two, like you just said, Sarah on the cover wasn't there. You know, you had that 70% drop of your of the fans because you only your hardcore fans stay, but you're not realizing this. And Berserk is being released, the Keanu Reeves comics being released, but you're not, you know, this is like a perfect storm of shit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. When you put it out. So what is like your goal that you added for two that maybe was that like part of it as well? If you would have lowered that, if you would have had a lower goal, or did you see, I made 10 on one, I'm going to at least put 8 on two.
Well, that's what we thought. Right. So what we did is we talked to some other people. Actually, someone that really helped out was Carl Kessel.
Yeah.
He sent us an email straight up just telling us next steps. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very, very helpful. I wish we'd talked to him more since then, but Ron Randall came, stepped up, gave us a hand. A whole bunch of people were like, hey, this is how you make adjustments. But the big thing was to lower it down to accept a normal amount of Kickstarter proceeds. 10 is extremely high for a comic book that lives exactly in the Kickstarter realm. You know, and we started to learn that. Kickstarter really is like a comic book store. And it's the same kids coming into the store that buy the Kickstarter brand comics.
Yeah.
The guys that do better than set 4 to 7,000 are guys that have outside influence outside of Kickstarter. But anyone who lives in the Kickstarter realm does around $4,000 to $7,000. So we lowered it down to there. We put Sarah back on the cover. We actually altered the entire series a little bit because that's when we realized that Sarah really ends up becoming the lead character. And that was a lot of Greg's work actually helping fix that. And it's caused a lot of rewrites. So there's been some rewriting since then.
It happens in shows all the time, right?
Yeah.
You launch a show, have this cast of characters, you think it's going to be this ensemble, and then one ends up being the one that everybody gravitates to.
Spock. Spock's a great example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Spock,
yeah.
Because, you know, the pilot fails, right?
Yeah.
But they keep Spock and start the series up with a different cast, except they keep Spock.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, and on that note, to be honest, with Kickstarter, we were lucky because no publisher would have let us pivot if we would have failed on that issue two.
No.
You know, if that had been an issue two and it failed that badly, that would have been the end of the series.
Yeah, yeah.
Kickstarter allowed us to pivot. And we've been told since then that we are one of the most reliable of the Kickstarter comics. Like, our fans come out and hit us every time.
Yeah.
We have excellent retention.
You guys have good advertising, for lack of a better term, promotion, because I see your stuff and I know me and Greg are friends online and in life. So it's like, I'm going to see it regardless. But before I really knew who Greg was, I saw Starlight stuff, you know? I mean, I guess I've known Greg longer than that, but we did quite a bit. But,
yeah.
You know, and, but I don't see it just from Greg. I see it all over. Like I got onto Kickstarter and it was like on the first page.
Oh. Yeah, they do that for us now too. Because we're, like I said, we've become one of their brands. We're, if you think of Kickstarter like as Marvel, as a publisher in itself, but we're all independent, yeah. Right? We're one of their brands now. You know, that's what Starlight is. And I think that's really interesting. You know, the, it comes with limitations too, though, right? We really have a hard time getting beyond that Kickstarter clientele, you know.
Yeah, you got to get into the comic book stores, right? And how do you do that?
Yeah, well, that's through distribution. So we either sell to a publisher that already has distribution, mm-hmm. or we make Starlight our full-time life so we can do distribution through Diamond or Lunar.
Yeah.
You know, and we've had conversations with both of them because both of them have told me, you know, at San Diego when I met with them, that you know, you're beyond what Kickstarter can do for you. You're hidden in your wall. Like if, say, Kickstarter has 5,000 solid comic book buyers, right? The 300 we have that we're getting every week is probably all the 300 that are ever going to be interested in Starlight. Everyone knows you're there. Just you hit all 300 that you're going to get. You know, so you got to get out of there. But to get out of there, to work with Diamond, one of us would have to sacrifice more of their life.
Yeah.
For something that may not pay, you know, like I need health insurance. I'm not going to make enough money, no matter how good we do with Diamond, to get health insurance. Hell, even if we got a movie out of the deal, which one of us has, right? That's still not going to be enough. And I can't risk my other career right now to do that. And I think that's true with Greg as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Greg, you take it.
I always have dreams of something bigger, you know, and right. I know for a fact that it's not going to be paying the bills. It's not going to, you know, if it becomes a movie, oh, okay, cool. But it's, you know, it all comes down to that contract, those licensing terms, you know, and if you went with a publisher, like, you know, just, you know, people, other companies out there, like the Marvels or the Oni Presses or the Image or whatever it is, you're not going to get the deal that you think you're going to get out of it, you know, and the return is just, it just isn't there. You know, unless you can retain, and you have to have something super popular to retain the rights that you think you should, that you, you know, deserve.
Very true. Very true.
It's tough, tough industry. And that's why you kind of do it for your love of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what does Starlight mean to you guys as a whole? For your personal life, for your sanity.
Making comics with friends.
Friends, because
I think for the three of us, it's us being able to do a comic that we get to do.
Yeah.
There's no interference for us. Mm-hmm. You know, like we almost went with a major publisher twice. Those experiences would have altered Starlight significantly. And I don't think it would have been for the better. I think sometimes that is for the better. I think good editors can make a story better. They can make a good writer great. But right. The things they were talking to us about, the changes they wanted us to make, didn't let Starlight be this comic we wanted to make. This is such a different story. And putting it into a stereotype wouldn't have allowed it to have the separation it has.
Yeah.
It would have become another Alan Moore kind of knockoff superhero deconstruction thing. And I don't think us three wanted that.
Right. No. We already have the Alan Moore deconstruction, you know,
Got
to be super unique and it's got to be super different. I mean, there's only so many Brian K. Vaughns that gets to do whatever they want.
Right.
So it's tough. It's tough. Greg, you've been on some really cool intellectual property developed, like Junior Braves of the Apocalypse and now Starlight, and where do you fall on the paradigm of independent versus publishing?
That's a good question. I mean, having my hand in both baskets, as you will. You have your publisher hand that's like, oh, hey, cool. I do my thing. They take care of X, Y, and Z, but then I have to fit the parameter and get it in on this time frame or change these, like Travis was saying, got to change these characters to fit whatever this may, this need or want might be. Or if like, I mean, I will say like with Braves, there was some, the title was supposed to be more about scouts and stuff like that. And, had to change that because, Boy Scouts are very litigious and so changing that, but going and just, changing a couple things, characters, places and stuff like that to fit what makes sense. Or what certain things are, and then other things I've done with other publishers, it's very similar type of situation. We got to change dialogue because you can't say certain things, not that they're necessarily bad, just like it's just not like phrasing or whatever, it's just I don't know, you can't call somebody stupid.
Right.
You can't. So it's like, okay, so how do you get creative with, if somebody says that's stupid or something like that? So it's just very interesting where I think when you're working, if you're doing your own type of thing in independent work, I guess you take the hits for if you say something like that, if you write something that way and somebody does get offended, then it's on you. But with a publisher, they're like, hey, we can't take that kind of hit. So change your phrasing, I mean, it makes sense, but it's also like, but I think if something is dumb, then somebody would call that dumb, but that's just me. So like, like working on an independent book like Starlight and stuff like that, we have a lot of ability to do this. And then when that was getting the opportunity with Travis and Brett to create Overcast as an imprint of our own and having that kind of creative control over Starlight and then any other thing that we bring into what we're doing and bring into the fold is kind of nice, because then we have that ability to kind of guide other folks along with us or help create that kind of world and brand as well. So, I mean, we kind of did that with Battle Grapple Rebel with Mike Tanner, and that is, it's interesting to see like that type of story be told, because it's not something you're gonna see out there in the regular, in your normal publishing houses publishing.
How do you guys do the co-writing? So like on the book that I wrote, I initially was going to co-write it with Johnny Horsley, and I did the first draft, and then I sent it to him, and he was like, I'm going to make all these changes. And I was like, no. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't have a co-writer. I had to do it myself. And I'm always curious, how do you go through that process, and how do you actually, how do you keep the sanity, and how do you keep the ego? That's the word. How do you keep your ego in check when you have somebody else going over your work and saying click, 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 and making changes?
Well, you described the situation, except that, like if I draft something up and I sent it to Greg, I expect him to make changes and I just let it happen.
Yeah.
I come from a collaborative writing background. So technical writing and journalism, I don't get to say no to these people as part of my career, right? Even when I was doing stuff in Hollywood, one of my agent once asked me, he said, if we sell your comic or we sell the script, right, and they make a movie out of it and it's completely different than what you wrote and you hate it, what are you going to do? I'm like, nothing. I got a check. If I sold them my couch out of my house, I'm not going to come check on where they put the couch in their house afterwards. I got a check.
Yeah.
Looks good to me.
Yeah.
So that's how we do it. And I'll let Greg continue with that because Greg has to put up with my and thens when he gets a script from me.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, when I make changes or if I submit something that I've written to Travis and then he changes it, then I just cry.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, but why, Travis? It was awesome. Why are you being so stupid? I can say that to you. it is definitely one of those things where when we have there's a very good give and take with the way that we write together. Yeah. Because he expects me to make changes, I expect him to make changes on things that I, you know, if I have something that we've written separately, or if I, you know, have a suggestion or something like that and it doesn't fit, I want him to tell me that doesn't work out, you know. And then by all means, if we're both sitting in there and we're kind of stumped and it's like, do you think this is going to work out in the panels? Well, I guess that's not really a question for us. That's a question for Brett, because he's going to figure that one out. So if, and then when it comes down to that, then, you know, it's like, if he can't, if he's like, no, veto, then I guess that's the word, because like, you know, if he can't put it in the panel, then it doesn't.
Well, that's a really good point too, because it ends up going like, well, for this book in particular, let's be like that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I draft it up, right, based on conversations with Brett. I draft it up. I get a good framework. I send it to Greg. Greg says, you know what? Roger's not the interesting of a character. Roger shouldn't be the lead character. Let's go back and make it an ensemble. So we go back, we make it an ensemble, and Greg says, you know what? These issues are going to end up becoming a trade. There's no reason to recap what happened in the last issue in the first page. Stop listening to Stan Lee. Cut it. Go back. We do rewrites. Then we get it all going. We go to Brett. Brett has an unbelievable amount of experience making comic books. I mean, he's worked for everyone. He's strong. He's had films, you know, Surrogates based on his work with Bruce Willis. And so he'll come back and say, this isn't working. So Brett actually gets a copy of it before he even starts. Unlike the normal process, which is you send it out to an artist, the artist goes page by page and draws whatever you show him. Brett gets the comic book ahead of time. And he says, I'm not doing this. This we have to change because it won't look right. This isn't going to look good. You're going to want to move this other page. In fact, one of the things that we were really proud of, Brett kind of said kibosh on and changed the book drastically on one page. Yeah. And he was right, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
100%.
It was one of their biggest scenes. And Brett's like, no, we got to add a different page. We can't just have this happen like this. But then we got one more layer. After, we have a couple more layers. We have two cultural consultants we use, mm-hmm. because one of the things that does come up is that Sarah and Chris are actually half Mexican. And so it actually goes to Dr. Teresa, Roja. She's going to be so mad. She's so adorable, too. I like her. Uh-huh. But it goes to her, and she goes back and makes sure that Sarah and Chris act and behave the way they should, because we have our biases.
Yeah.
You know, and Sarah, she's a two counter, right? Because she's also like making sure Sarah is acting like a girl, you know, not like a creature written by two men, you know.
Yeah, so she's keeping us in check. Making right. sure that we're
so it goes to there. And then the last one service. Is you have oh go ahead.
Just saying that she's making sure that we're doing it a good service, writing a right. good character.
And then we have one last step is it goes to there it goes. Sorry. It goes to Tom Orzechowski, who's a guy who worked on like lettering for Star Wars, is the Guinness Book of World Records a title holder for the most consecutive comics written or lettered with Spawn. Mm-hmm. The guy is an industry legend.
Yeah.
And we go, he goes, he'll say, hey, do you mind if I make a suggestion? We're like, no, say whatever. Yes. He restructures stuff. He'll go back and say, you need more noise. Your comics are too quiet.
Yeah.
You know, so we get a lot of that. He fixes our lettering. He fixed our flag, the title flag. You know, he redid the kerning on it because it was slightly off. I have no idea what he was talking about. And Brett goes, oh, yeah, he's right. You know, so all those things go.
That's awesome.
Everyone along the step gets to say something, and because all of them have, and it kind of goes up in levels of experience too, right? You know, and by the time it's done, you're leaving with one of the greatest letters of all time, and a guy who just reads every comic book he can get his hands on, you know, and he's the one doing the final judgment on it.
I like the fact that you guys are having consultants on it, and that's one of the things that I try to do. Is I have a character, she's a black girl. And so I talked to some of my friends, but now I'm really wanting to find a person to talk to and make sure that, you know, actions and speech and the way they talk is appropriate and correct, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Not assumptions.
So, it's important.
Yeah. So here we go. This is the active Kickstarter. You guys can go out there right now and check out their Kickstarter and pledge. Check it out. Let's check out their rewards. I'd play the video, but it never really comes out very well when we do that over Zoom. So, and you know, actually, if you guys, well, we'll talk later. Here we go. So you guys, 8 created, 134 backed by good old Travis there. So that's always nice to see. You guys have the classic digital copy for $5. You get Starlight number 6. I am one of those backers. There I am right there behind whoever that guy is. And then the physical copy, cover A. I just paid my mortgage, or I would do the physical copy. Physical copy, cover A. So you're getting one digital download of issue 6, one physical print of issue 6, an 8.5x11 pinup, a random 1-6 trading card, and a sticker. What kind of stickers did you guys get this time around?
These are just vinyl, normal little vinyl stickers you get from Sticker Meal. I'll just say it. Everyone uses them. They make nice little die cuts, and it will look just like that little image there of Sarah and Chris.
Nice. And then you have the all digital backing issues. 1-6, $16, good price.
Great for international buyers.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, that's perfect, because then you're not paying those exorbitant shipping fees. Because that's
$30.
Yeah.
$30 for shipping. I'm in the same boat, and it's like, it drives you nuts. Because, like, I live in Seattle, and I want to send something up to Vancouver. It's $24.
$24.
You can drive there.
Yeah, I can drive there for less than that.
Mm-hmm. You should just drive there and then ship them all out from...
Yeah.
It would actually cost them more to ship it in Vancouver to another Canadian region.
Really?
Because region to region in Canada is more expensive than US to Canada or US to anywhere.
Oh wow. Okay.
So there's a guy, cool. A guy named Sarab Bhatia. He owns comics.one, comix.one. And they're a digital delivery system for independent comic books. That's all he sells. And the I believe it's a 70-30 split on everything. I was just checking it out. It's kind of cool. He's doing everything himself. So the website, all of it. And one of the things he's trying to do is set up we had him on the podcast, so I'm not giving any trade secrets away. He is trying to set up a distribution, but he's trying to set up printers in other countries. So a printer in Australia, a printer in different regions in Canada and Mexico. And so when you have, say, somebody that wants to buy in Australia and you're here, then you can send that file to the Australian company and they'll print and ship from there.
Isn't that print on demand to its fullest advantage?
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes, but it's kind of cool. So here's all digitals, like you're saying, great for the international crowd. A physical copy of variant cover B, which is what we saw Sarah on the cover again. $18. You get all the same as cover A, just a little bit more for that variant cover. And then of course physical variant cover C. You guys went with three covers.
Yep, just three. And just to note,
when you buy the variant, it does come with the Prime cover as well. So you're getting both.
Oh, nice. So, and then both variants and physical. And then the party kid variants plus pin plus trading cards, $50. That's a lot right there. You get a lot. That's the one thing that it's kind of cool with just the independent scene and Kickstarter is you're not just getting a book, you know, you're getting so much more that people love to see and the feel that tactile feel in their hands with the pins and the stickers and mm-hmm. kind of you feel like you're part of knowing the creator that's behind the book, not this, you know, you get a Marvel book and it's just, you know, it's a Marvel. Book. Yeah. You don't even, you know, I don't know about you, but it wasn't until I was a teenager that I actually paid attention to who was actually writing and drawing the books.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I started reading back in like 1979, you know, and the first series that I read that I actually understood was Magic. But still didn't know that who wrote it. Like I didn't know who Louise Simonson was or anything. And then, you know, it wasn't until the late '80s when the trade paperback of Wolverine's limited series came out that I understood writers were different and artists were different. So it's kind of cool with Kickstarter. You get that you get a feeling of more of a personal relationship. All physical back issues, $60. That's a great deal. So you get all 1 through 5 plus number 6. Mm-hmm. And then the trading cards and the pinups. And then all back issues with issue six variants. That's really cool. So you get all of them. Plus you get variant B and C. And you get A too, right? With that one?
Yep.
And then the kitchen sink. So all the issues, pinup, stickers, everything, $100. And then you as a raver. So this would be for issue 7, I would take it.
It should come out in issue 6. It should come out now in the same issue. We should have everything aligned now.
So can I ask how you do that?
Well, we don't go to print until the Kickstarter is done. So we request all the images beforehand. And then we add them to the back of the page.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you scroll down a little bit, there's a picture of what we do on the main page. So there's the cover. Okay. You'll get down to a rewards section. And if you do all the way to the bottom of the rewards, there's just some of the art.
Did you guys do a section in 3D?
No, but that's funny you should mention that. I'll tell you something in a second. There it is, 300. So if you see there, go up a little bit. It says, you as a raver.
Yeah.
And if you can expand the screen a little bit, they can see, but there's a picture that the Kylie, was her name, sent us. And then there's the picture that Kylie ended up with in the book. And she got a physical copy of the print signed by Brett. So if you can see that there, her red hair up there in the corner. Yeah. Oh. And that's all the stuff you get. It's insane amount of stuff. So the thing about 3D, we've been talking a little bit. We don't know if we'll ever be able to do it, but we did talk a little bit about doing a 3D cover with the red and blue glasses.
Yeah.
But it's very prohibitive. It'd be almost impossible.
I don't know. Greg, you grew up here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember back. You might have been too young for this, but back in like 1986, 1987, KSTW Channel 11 used to do a lot of movies like in the afternoon and the early evening before they started doing like WKRP reruns and stuff like that. And they had this old black and white movie that was, well, not black and white, just this old like horror sci-fi movie. I don't even remember what it was, but it was 3D on TV, and you had to go to the rack,
yes,
and you get your 3D glasses.
Yeah,
and I remember, I can't remember what there was quite a few comics that tried doing it in the 80s with the.
There was a Gumby one. There was a Ghostbusters one. I think Now Comics put them out.
Never worked very well.
They were kind of not kind of iffy and stuff, but there was a Speed Racer one, I think, because like Now had like all the
the licensing for that kind of stuff. But I had a lot. I had a lot of 3D comics.
I just gotta say it because you just reminded me. Yeah. KST Washington.
Well, I'm old enough to remember Channel 13 KSPQ.
Ding, oh yeah.
Ding.
Oh my God! And the pirate guy they had that would come on before the movie and talk to you, and then later they got rid of him and they had the time clock with that music. To the time music because for the late night show and it has the clock going and they play it.
Yep. Dude, they have to tell you. So Channel 13, the local Fox affiliate, used to be their Washington's own movie channel, right?
Yeah.
They literally had a commercial in the late 70s, early 80s that you could drive to Green Mountain in Bremerton and they would tell you how to move their whole antenna system so you can get a better signal at your house. Oh, look at this art.
Yeah, Brett is amazing.
Ah,
the light.
I missed the early bird specials. Early bird
got it all.
$7. Come on. Digital print, $2. Get out of here.
That's probably why we don't hit 10,000 anymore if they lowered all our prices so much.
I got to put Greg on the spot a little bit because I went through my Kickstarter and I said, Greg, can you go through my rewards and tell me if I'm doing this right? Because I had never done this. This is my first one that's coming out. And he was like, yeah, let's do this. And he goes through, he goes, oh yeah, you should lower this and you should have this and let's go through. And I'm like, okay, this sounds great. So I go through it. Every single person I talk to after that, you really need to up all of your prices.
We get told that a lot actually too.
My first physical was like at $4 and or $5 and they're like, that needs to be minimal 10. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I go, Craig, you look at this again. He's like, oh, so you just changed all the prices? Well, if that's what you want to do.
That's what you want to do, man. No, I mean, I was telling you on the early birds to drop them down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we did drop them on the early birds. Maybe we should do a little bit more. Just trying to make it so that I'm not cutting into the printing costs and of what it took for my artist and my, you know what I mean?
Well, my suggestion was that you know what your printing cost is, know what your exact cost is, and then go over that by X amount percent to cover all that.
Yeah.
And then know that and feel comfortable with that. And if you know that you can do it at a decent amount price, stay at that price. If you feel like you need to go higher to give yourself the padding.
Yeah.
I just feel personally, I know that what we've done in the past has been successful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm right with what you guys have going on here. I love how,
we're not even in 48 hours. 86%.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So
I will point out that we did have to raise our prices a little bit on the standalone. So I did that. So we just include, I think the pinup now and the sticker, we just include it with it now because this issue is actually a little bit longer than our previous issue and our costs went up for printing. So, but the other thing we did is we lowered the variant covers because it was just a better, what we were told. And after looking at the past, it was smarter to bring them down, you know, in price.
Yeah. This is, I love how you guys show your reward packs. This looks amazing.
Well, I'll be honest here. We use a guy. We got a guy.
Yeah.
We got a guy that makes our videos. He puts all these reward tiers together for, because I am lazy and Greg and I and Brett have other jobs.
I have a time job. Sure, I was driving Greg crazy. I'm like, hey, can you look at this? Hey, what do you think of this? Hey, I stress out. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, what I'm doing, and then I just start putting crap together, and then and then Johnny looks at it, he goes, I'm gonna redo all of these graphics. I love this looks so good. Oh, now I can't wait to read it. I don't know why I didn't get the first. I don't know why I didn't get this in the past. This is like right up my alley.
You slept on it, man.
Did I totally
just
slept.
Just like all the people that find us at shows that are like, "What is this? How do I find out about it?" We just did. Oh my. Why don't you buy them?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what is strange. We get so many younger girls, mm-hmm. and they'll come up with their dads and their moms, and I'm just staring. I'm like, "Are you sure you want your kid to buy this?"
Yeah.
Like, it just freaks me out a little bit, but they're in love with Sarah. The kids love Sarah.
But what kind of rating would you put on them?
R?
It's definitely like a, like, it's not a children's book. It's not a kid. It's not a teenage book. It is definitely for an adult audience in a sense, you know, like 18 and older, you know. If you're a parent and you're like, "Oh, hey, my kids watch stuff like that. They see all these references and stuff like that." It's parental discretion advised. But I mean,
I mean,
a lot of times kids will come up to the table when they and I'm talking about Junior Braves and they're like, "Yeah, but this one looks really cool because they see something that Mary Bellamy's done and she draws My Little Pony and she did one of our alternate covers." You see the early bird special image over there, and
yeah, it's like My Little Pony artist.
Yeah, and it's like, and they see one of those covers, and they're like, "Oh wow, that's really cool," and they think the whole book's going to be like that, and it's like, no.
Oh, you did Ions, Travis.
Yeah, I wrote the one about World War One.
Oh, I did Nancy Ions, Krampus Killer.
Oh yeah, I remember the Christmas one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, we're all in
That's
there.
That's the other one I remember well. I remember mine, and I remember the Krampus Killer. There you go.
You know what I did is I wrote that, and then I told Johnny, I said, "You need to put this in on the merits of it. Don't put it on in because you're my nephew," because he's my nephew, right? He's married to my niece. And I said, "Don't put it in because we're family, right? If you don't like it, don't put it in." But then I went and hired Scott Godlesky, and had him do those three pages, and so then I handed him a fully done thing, and he was like, "Well, shit, now I gotta put it in."
Cheater.
It looked so good though, and it did,
it looked great,
and then he colored it, and I was like, "Well, this is great." It was perfect. He wanted me to have a elf be the person behind the man in the chair,
mm-hmm.
for while she's on her intercom. And I was like, "Nah, it's got to be Saint Nick. It's got to be, because everybody always doesn't use Saint Nick for that kind of stuff." And I'm like, "Ah, it's got to be Santa. I want him to be in the grime."
That's nepotism.
We put it in there, Greg.
Huh? What?
What was your?
So, mine was a story that was supposed to go with another story that was removed from the anthology. Because of some issues there's a plagiarism issue that somebody had submitted their story.
So
I had to rewrite my story to not be anything attached to what the original story that we had done.
Yeah.
And had to redo a whole entire story. But it was a Skinwalker story.
Okay.
Now they're going to come to my door. Thanks a lot.
I do remember the Skinwalker story. And I remember Michael Tanner's story, which was disturbing.
he just wrote about a childhood, so.
Yeah.
I love Michael so much.
I love his writing style, which I don't think he gets enough credit for. Because I
taught him everything he knows. No, I'm just joking. Well, no, he is awesome.
He's really good. Starlight 6 on Kickstarter right now. The link's going to be below. Go check it out. You can go to starlightkickstarter.com, and that takes you right to it, correct?
Yep. Starlightkickstarter.com will take you right to Starlight.
That is perfect. And then let's come back in. I got a couple other questions for you guys, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Oh, there it is.
Oh. Yeah,
screen grab one.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Show us your story.
Oh.
What's your story?
I got to look for it. You were going to say something, though? I was listening.
So you mentioned Overcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you talk about Overcast?
Here we go, real quick.
Oh, nice.
So, okay. The, you know, that's a two-parter, so there's a second part of that story. It's going to happen in the second volume. Anyways, Overcast is our tiny little imprint comics publishing. We actually published something for Michael now as well. We are also talking to John about doing a rerun of Ainz under the imprint to help fund Ainz 2, Anthology 2. So we've been going back and forth with the Red Lines now to do that contract. We just picked up the, I'm going to say it because I think I can now. So Greg might be shocked to hear me say this, but we just picked up the license to publish graphic novels as sequels to the 1997 movie Nemesis, the cyborg film, you know? So we're doing a sequel and a prequel. Brett's doing the prequel series, a graphic novel. I'm doing the sequels graphic novel. And people who've seen Nemesis were like, there's a Nemesis 2 already. Yes, but this is Nemesis between 1 and 2 because there's a 70-year span between them. And this one has Alex Rain in it. So it's actually called Albert Pyun's Nemesis, The Return of Alex Rain. And then the prequel is like, I don't know. Greg, did you think of a cool subtitle yet for it?
I haven't gotten a really cool subtitle for it, but it is basically the genesis of Alex Rain and why he is who he is.
Yeah, that's a really good one. So have you seen the movie at all?
Nemesis?
Yeah.
Saw it in like 1997.
He rented a video store like the rest of us, right?
I ran a Hollywood video. I was a manager of a Hollywood video, so I've seen like everything in the 90s. I've seen it.
So we negotiated as part of the deal with the Pune estate because I'm helping finish Albert's last films.
That's awesome.
Right now, trying to get those together and get some of those other things that, you know, he left us last year, but he left us with some work that was just on the edge of being finished. And part of the agreement is that we get that licensing deal to do Gnosis. So the idea behind Overcast, and we don't know if this works yet, right, is to self-publish stuff that's really strong and powerful in Kickstarter to make that initial cash, right? The hardest thing for a lot of publishers, especially mid-range publishers, right, that medium level, is they got to invest a lot of money in this graphic novel, right? And then they got to make that money back. And trades sell okay, but they don't necessarily always sell enough to give a good, reasonable payout plus some back end, right? So the goal of most of these smaller publishers is to get it to become a movie.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why you have so many of these deals where they give the guys like a couple hundred bucks or $1,000 for their comic and no rights to film. Like you lose rights to your character.
That's tough.
Right? And we were in that kind of the same boat. Yeah. Right? You're like, hey, here's a couple grand, and you're going to have no more rights to Starlight after this.
Yeah, and if you don't have a way to sustain yourself, it's hard to say no to that because it's money in hand.
Right, so we said no,
yeah.
And we went to Kickstarter, which, to be honest, that's a lot of Greg and Brett, because I was like,
we should take this. I want to do this so bad.
They're like, no, don't do it. You know,
we can do it ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. And so we're getting paid better financially. Starlight's making more than many mid-range comics or even some major publishing titles,
yeah,
in net, right? It's making really good money.
Yeah.
And that's something that a lot of other comics can't say. It's not getting the spread that some of those other titles get, but it's definitely making more cash than those titles. That allows us, in hopes, to take that upfront cost that we would normally ask for check for. It gives us negotiating power to take something and say, look, we have a fan base. We've proven the IP can stand on its own legs. We've already made what you would want to give us to up front. Let's negotiate a deal and let's make sure media rights are in here this time.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the kind of dichotomy that we have with Overcast, with publishing Starlight, doing it on Kickstarter, and then selling it at shows is much like
when you take a look at Masterpiece selling mixtapes out of his car back in the 80s and early 90s and becoming who he is and doing all that in the hip hop community, it's one of those things where you end up, yeah, you hustle, you grind, and you do all these things, but you end up learning how all these things kind of interconnect, and you make that face to face and that the hand to hand contact with people at shows and other places, and you're making more sales and you're pushing more product that way. And in many cases, we're putting more books out there on that level, just like a person selling mixtapes out of their car, yeah, out of a backpack on a bus or a train, yeah, you know. And I mean, you see that at comic shows, you see that when you go to events and stuff like that, that's part of the hustle. That's part of the thing when you're out, you know, like I see that all the time when I'm in downtown Seattle and stuff like that. So, but I mean, that's, you take that type of business tactic and you put it towards this, and that's kind of what we do. Yeah. The same thing when we walk into a comic book store, we might not have that ability to get that distribution at the moment, and we didn't have it, or, you know, Travis is working on it. But I mean, we've gotten into comic book shops by doing that same type of thing.
True.
And walking in saying, hey, you know me, I've come into the store, I bought stuff, or you carry this book that I do, or you carry this book that Brett does, would you carry this that we did together? And more often than not, we've gotten the books on the shelves.
Yeah. Yeah. You try to get them in like on consignment. Hey, you don't even have to give me money up front. Here's 20 copies.
Well, even better right now, if you look at our Kickstarter, there's a spot called Tipping Jar. I don't know why there's not a graphic there, by the way. It's driving me nuts all day today. But if people do a Kickstarter, throw in a couple bucks into that tipping jar, we use that money to ship the extra copies that we can buy with that money to a couple of local shops that we have contact. One of them is Digital Heroes in Walla Walla. Maxim in Las Vegas is getting some issues tomorrow. I'm delivering to them personally. And then I think, is it 716 in New York? They're a huge shop that we send them issues as part of that deal. And they've actually purchased more issues. They're one of our biggest buyers, actually. Yeah. They've gone and ordered 100 at a time before.
And it's crazy. It's a shop that, I mean, like, they just know us from just being on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, and then Gabby's down in Olympia and stuff like that, home store, you know. So just pop in and drop off some books.
So Overcast, we're just trying to show that we're trying to help see where this new channel is, because the comic landscape is changing, and Overcast is trying a new way of doing it, channeling it through Kickstarter to get upfront cash and then move to distribution and the capability of moving on to further media.
You know, what's funny is the way you're describing this is how most products work. You use Kickstarter to get your initial investment up. You got, like, build a cool, fancy Dick Tracy watch, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, you can do all this stuff. You go to Kickstarter, you're like, I need 50 grand to get this thing to a production line, right? And then people go through and they get it, and boom, you get your 50 grand, or maybe you get a million, whatever it is. Now you've got the capital to start not only building it at a rate that makes sense, but then now you have your distribution availability because you have the capital to actually provide distribution. Then you're selling it to the general public at the cost that's supposed to be sold at, right? And then so that's kind of like what you guys are, that's how I'm seeing it in my head, that you guys are kind of doing. There's a part of me that wants to be able to replicate that myself. Because I have like a billion ideas in my head, and I'm like, if this one project does well, then I'm gonna do it again. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Got like literally 10 written out on my whiteboard in my bedroom, and I'm just gonna like just fire them off as I go. So,
I mean, you have people that go out there and try to get their 5 minutes to get on Shark Tank and get one shark, Yeah. And we're showing you, I mean, you can do that, or you can get a whole school of fish.
Yeah.
To get you there.
Yeah. You can do it yourself. That's the one nice thing about being where we're at, you know, is you work hard, you can make it, you can do it. As you're putting the work in. And I got a Master P story for you. You brought up Master P.
Yeah.
My buddy used to be the personal electrician for Gary Payton.
Oh.
Yeah. So in the early 2000s and late 90s, about 2-3 years after they went to the finals, right? We'd go down to the Key Arena, and Chuck would call Gary's wife or Gary's bodyguard, his personal guy.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm here. Can I get in? And if no one was using his suite, then they would let us in. And so we'd get all go see Sonics games in the 90s at Key Arena in Gary Payton's personal suite. And we were there, and Gary, they were playing the Denver Nuggets, and we're all there. We all bought beer, and Gary looks up into his suite, and we all give him the beer sign, like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, we start drinking. And then all of a sudden, not even 2 minutes later, his wife's knocking on the door going, who the fuck is in our suite? You know? And then she opens it up. Oh, it's Chuck, blah, blah, blah. She goes, okay, well, some people might be coming in. I'm sitting there watching the game. And all of a sudden, this guy, this tall guy and this other guy come walking in. And the tall guy sits right next to me. And I'm done. I'm talking shit because I love the Sonics. I haven't watched the NBA since they were stolen from us. I have not watched one NBA. So I've completely missed LeBron James' career. I've missed actually being a powerhouse. I've missed all of it. I know it because I because of news, but I didn't watch any. I've missed all of it. And I won't watch them until the NBA is back because I just, oh yeah, don't. Anyways, so I'm talking to this guy and we're like we're chest bumping. We're giving each other high fives. We're like hugging. We're talking shit. We're going, you know what I mean? Just cheering on the Sonics. He's like, all right, play. I got to go. And he gives me a thing, gives me a hug, and he leaves. No idea who he is. My buddy Brandon, he's behind me. And Brandon is in the music. He was in the music industry doing like running boards and stuff. He goes, do you know who that was? And I'm like, no clue. Cause he told me his name, but it didn't register. I was too in the moment. I was drunk too, because we were drinking beers after beers. And he was like, that was Master P. And I was like, who? He's like, Master P. It was awesome.
That is rad, dude.
Yeah. That was my Master P story. It's good times.
So cool.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing not only your stories of how this came about, your Kickstarter as a whole, Overcast. Guys, get out there. Check out Starlight. It's a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Spaghetti!